Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the best Packer radio show on the internet.
Cheesehead Radio.
I want to be a lifetime
Cheesehead
Green Bay Packer.
You're looking good today.
Look out there, with that ass.
Aaron Rodgers is the best football player I've ever seen, ever.
Aaron Rodgers goes deep on second and two. He's got to leap in Devontae Adams.
He's a bad man.
More pressure, ball is out. Green Bay got
the Cheesehead family.
Daniels again.
Let's make no mistake about it. This game is won and lost so quick.
Hey, let's go dominate on three. One, two, three, dominate.
Cheesehead Radio.
And welcome back to another week here at Cheesehead Radio. The Green Bay Packers had a last-second comeback win over the lowly San Francisco 49ers. They head into a bye week, needing to contemplate their life choices. Sitting at 3-2-1, they're not out of the playoff picture, but we got a lot of concerns, and we're here tonight to talk you through it. Joined tonight by the amazing Kelly Hodgson-Klein. How you doing tonight, Kelly?
I am fabulous. How are you, CD? Looks like we're down Cheesehead.
Well, my name is CD Angeli of Packers Talk Cheesehead TV. Normally, we're joined by the radiant Jersey Albracco, but he is under the weather tonight. So we're just going to go it alone. Y'all set for this, Kelly?
Hey, let's do this.
Let's do it. Sponsoring the Packers Talk Radio Network once again are our good friends at Ticket King. Now, they've been selling Packers, Badgers, and other tickets in Wisconsin. Might be able to get some tickets for the next two Brewer games when, of course, they went out and take the National League Series. For over 25 years and have earned a reputation for excellent customer service and prices, be sure to check out their website at theticketking.com. That takes care of the formalities. Let's move some cheese.
Who moved my cheese?
Who moved my cheese as we evaluate some of our favorite and not so favorite players from Monday night's win slash sort of win slash sort of loss against the 49ers. Let's start with Sharp Cheddar. This is our excellent crowd pleasing favorite. Mine has to be the one and only Aaron Rodgers. I'm truly not sure how many other quarterbacks can rally a team back like he did. Sheer force of will and raise the level of play around his teammates in those final 3 minutes. Rodgers has been bailing out Mike McCarthy for years now.
Okay, I'm going to have to go with the mayor of Redemptionville, and that's Mason Crosby. After probably the worst game of his entire life, he bounced back like it never even happened. I had no doubt in my mind he was going to hit those shots on Monday night, and he'd hit everything that was thrown at him, including that game winner, which, of course, superstitious me did not see. But yeah, my sharp cheddar is Mason Money Crosby.
All right, now we're moving on to our Swiss cheese. This is good, but has some holes in it. My Swiss cheese this week, Jimmy Graham. Now, there's a lot of people starting to bemoan Jimmy Graham and not having the impact. We're starting to wish we had Jared Cook back. We started hearing that a little bit in the Twitterverse. Instead of the guys that we signed this year, Jimmy Graham showed up, had a 100-yard game, had an amazing 50-something-yard catch. Doesn't still seem to be quite on the same page at times with Aaron Rodgers, but much closer. Jimmy Graham, my Swiss cheese.
All right, my Swiss cheese are the baby wide receivers. And I think that they really rose to the occasion. MVS, Valdez-Scantling, and Equimanius St. Brown, EQSB, were both just outstanding. They did not play like rookies. MVS became one of Rodgers' very trusted receivers Monday night. He kind of filled in for Geronimo Allison and then some. And then there was that circus catch from Equimanius that he knew where he was in time and space, including his feet as he was twisting to the ground. It was fabulous. No, they were not the same thing as Devontae Adams and Geronimo, but they were pretty darn close. So they are my Swiss cheese.
And finally, it's our Limburger cheese. Foul-smelling, throw it away. My Limburger cheese this week. There's still plenty to choose from, but I'm giving it to Clay Matthews. The straight line whiff of Pierre Garçon in the open field was so embarrassing. I mean, it wasn't even Garcon threw a move at him. He just caught the ball and stopped, and he just ran past him like it wasn't even looked. There was no change of direction. There was no attempt. Even Brady Popinga had to watch this game and go, dude, seriously? Clay Matthews is having such little impact on the game. We should have sent him packing with Jordy this year and given us more room to sign Khalil Mack. Clay Matthews is my Limburger cheese.
Well, I'm starting to sound like I'm beating a dead horse, but my stinky stank Limburger cheese is once again McCarthy's foul play calling. You remember that timeout that Rodgers took? It was like third and a bunch. It was like maybe third quarter.
Yes.
Okay, so yes. I'm absolutely convinced Rodgers called timeout, so he didn't have to run that predictable crappy draw play that even the ice cream vendor on the fourth level of the stadium knew was coming. That is my Limburger cheese. All right, we've got great Packers talk coming here on Cheesehead Radio, but first, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
The Playbook.
Well, I feel like we watched two different games, at least two different Aaron Rodgers, maybe two different Mike McCarthy's. It was a very split personality game against the 49ers, Kelly. 57 minutes of bleh, and then 3 minutes of amazing sauce to win the game. What an impressive finish to what was a miserable game. What's your initial thoughts here, Kelly?
I spent the first 57 minutes of this game just getting more and more frustrated and cranky by the moments. If you follow my Twitter feed, I went from, hey, we look pretty good, to, oh my God, it's the same old Packers. Yeah, I'm really happy they won, but it really, again, highlighted some of their flaws. Because, yeah, we won, but we won against a not very good team, and it took all 60 minutes to do it. You know, how did we get in the position where we were behind the eight ball until the very end? And I know we're going to hit on some of those points tonight. But a win's a win. There are no style points in football, so I'll take it. What were your first impressions?
Well, some of my afterthoughts, I think, was obviously there was our good friend Skip Bayless. And, of course, he was using the opportunity to trash Aaron Rodgers. But even Stephen A. Smith I think he's on ESPN. Oh, anyway, came in, and he also, yes. He also mentioned, hey, nice win. Aaron Rodgers did a great job, et cetera, but this was against the San Francisco 49ers. This is 2 weeks in a row that we have struggled mightily against one-win teams. We lost the first one, and we had to have this massive comeback to win the second one. So I think what we're dealing with right now, Kelly, is a team that we can sit there and pat ourselves on the back that they're 3-2-1 and they have, quote unquote, a winning record. But after this bye week, they've got real competition. So I don't think anyone's coming out of this game or into this bye with a whole lot of confidence, because this team hasn't demonstrated the ability to beat a 500 team at this point, the way that they're playing.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. After the high of Mason Crosby banging that one through as time elapsed, it became more of a, yay, we didn't lose, I guess. That isn't the same as really celebrating a victory.
Well, it didn't feel deserved. You know what I mean? We won the game, and yet, if you're feeling this, the tone of the Twitterverse, it was almost like we wanted to lose. We almost wanted to say, okay, this team doesn't deserve to win. We need to nail some people to the wall right now. And of course, I think we all know who the number one suspect was that people wanted to get nailed to the wall. And all of a sudden you come out with this win. It's like, good.
But then he gets a save execution is what happens. That's
yes!
The most frustrating thing.
That's what's happening.
You
want to
run around
on
a wheel. It's like, oh, we can't fire him. He won. It's like, ah, we can't even do that right.
So I agree with you completely. I think that you saw in those final 3 minutes, I think you saw a lot of players show the potential that we know this team has. Like you said, we saw those baby. I mean, MVS right now is probably my next jersey that I'm going to buy, because I need to get rid of my Clinton Dix jerseys. He really came.
Dude, you were
going to
go with the punter 2 weeks ago. Shame on you. You're so fickle.
Well, I haven't bought one yet. I got to decide.
Scott, I still love you. I'll buy your jersey.
You know who did a great job? Jamon Moore caught his first passes, and even though he almost bottled it, which is, doesn't surprise me, all three of them did a great job catching the ball. They came together. You saw Aaron Rodgers raise that level of play. You saw suddenly the line started blocking. I was watching that one play where he went back, and they're like, he has a lot of time. He's moving back. He steps back. He moves up. He steps back again. He runs for whatever it was, 16 yards. They did a great job blocking, but they hadn't done that for 57 minutes. They were a turnstile.
But, you know, when the, one of the things I noticed in those final 3 minutes is you saw a lot of hurry-up offense again. You saw Aaron Rodgers taking command of the team and not Mike McCarthy. And I think that was the starkest contrast of the game. It was Aaron was going to put the game on his shoulders, and he ran that offense. He was in charge, and he was calling it. It wasn't McCarthy at the end. The tempo, the tone was entirely different. And yeah, that was my take, at least in the stadium. You know, what did you think watching it at home on those final 3 minutes? Or were you at the game? I don't know.
I could have been at the game, but I wasn't. I'll tell you, it'll actually transition into our next topic anyway, which is Aaron Rodgers. Jersey Al was here. I think that's one thing he really harped on quite a bit this week was that first half you saw Mike McCarthy almost kind of giving in to the crowd. Well, fine, you want me to be creative? Fine, here, I'll rush Aaron Jones and I'll do some creative sets, blah, blah, blah. And then the second half, he went right back to what he usually did. And I think it was very obvious and was felt by the players and the fans and anyone watching. And then all of a sudden, Aaron Rodgers just said, forget it, I'm doing this. There was a point.
Okay,
I don't know if you, so it was 6 seconds left. 6 seconds left, Kelly. 6 seconds left. I don't know if you saw it on. Obviously, maybe you didn't see it at the game, but it was clear.
Six seconds going to run it down. It was in my corner. I was right there.
You're clearly going to run out the kicker, and Aaron Rodgers turns to the sideline, holds up a one, and says, "I'm doing one more play."
Yeah,
Aaron Rodgers, with 6 seconds on the list, is calling the plays and telling Mike McCarthy, "Nope. Just leave the kicker there. I got this." And he does attempt one more
play. Aaron didn't want to run.
I mean, obviously, it didn't go anywhere. But he did it. He's calling the plays. That was his team.
That's the type A that he is. It's like he decided with 3 minutes to go, this is my show. This is my team. And McCarthy can just shove it, it seems like. And he was running it. And he wasn't there to win on a field goal. He was there to put it in the end zone. And the fact that he had enough cojones to do it with 6 seconds really showed me that. And the fact that he had 3 seconds left, it was like he's going to do one quick shot. He had such a command of the clock at that point. At first, I was like, why is he throwing it? But I'm like, oh, wait, it's Aaron. Never mind. He's either going to score right here and it's over with, or he's going to give Mason 1 to 3 seconds to get the job done. But, yeah, this was an Aaron that was sick of the scripted play calling. And just the efficiency in that last minute, and I'm not even going to say 3 minutes, the last minute, everything fell together. The baby wide receivers knew exactly where they were. They knew where they had to get out of bounds. Aaron had I think he only spiked the ball once to stop the clock. And I think that was at about 25 seconds, if I remember correctly. But he had absolute command of the clock, which I have not seen him do this entire season. And here, since we're talking about Aaron, I found this really interesting stat on Twitter today. Zachary Jacobson put this up today. That if you look at... since 2016, Rodgers in the red zone. And this is what drives me nuts, and everyone's like, oh, he can't finish the deal. But Rodgers in the red zone since 2016, this is 29 starts, so it's factoring in his injuries. 55 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. We saw that Aaron Rodgers last night.
Well, certainly you saw it in the last 3 minutes, and I think that was amazing. I think they said this is 2 400-yard games in a row with no interceptions. It's craziness. But one thing that you saw on the first drive, the one where we scored the touchdown, is he just opened it up. I mean, he went downfield with Jimmy Graham, scored the touchdown to Davante Adams, really, really great plays. But on that final drive, it's very difficult against an NFL defense, even if it's the 49ers, we'll give you that. But it's very difficult when they know they have to guard the sidelines. I mean, they want you to throw the ball in the middle of the field at this point. If you got a minute left, you want the ball in the middle of the field because you can stand on them, you can sit on them. They didn't have any timeouts. You can waste 20, 30 seconds on one play. And you're doing it with rookie wide receivers, and yet he was putting it on the nose. And these rookie wide receivers are making the catches on the side, trick catches, toe dragging catches on the sideline, this team was playing at another level, and you see Aaron Rodgers still has that ability playing on a broken MCL to raise the level of the play when it's his team and he's calling the shots.
And one thing I also noticed about him was he really had high expectations for Valdez-Scantling and Equimanius. There was one time Valdez-Scantling was out of position, and it was just, you know, one of those throw-on-a-dime type passes, and it just missed him. And instead of Aaron losing his mind, I had my binoculars on him, he actually was coaching him. You know, you need to be right there. It wasn't, he wasn't screaming at him like you see Brady do. There was a little bit of on-the-field coaching where I saw some of that. And people, you know, nail Rodgers for his supposed lack of leadership. But in moments like that, where a rookie quarterback could fall apart, Aaron was building him up, and I really appreciated that.
And, yeah, I think you see them definitely going in to fill roles. They're being receptive. I think that Rodgers knows that these guys are saving his life. They're the ones who have to catch the ball. It's also a really good situation to have because we may be getting Randall Cobb back and, Geronimo Allison back. And now you have Adams, Cobb, Allison, MVS, Equanimous. I mean, you have... You can do you have a lot of weapons right now that right now Aaron Rodgers has trust in, but none maybe
and
more
one of
so
the,
right now than Devontae Adams.
And then one receiver that I think that's not going to be appreciated, but he actually rose to the occasion last night, was tight end Lance Kendricks, Wisconsin's own.
Yes.
You know, we were usually bemoaning that he's screwing up, but he was catching him when we needed him to catch it. And he was pretty consistent last night. And I think... You know, he didn't quite hit the muster for Swiss cheese today, but I think he did a pretty darn good job.
Really, I think you had some good action from all the receivers, even throughout the game. The problem, of course, came on the offensive line and the protection that Rodgers was having. He was getting hit. He was being rushed. But yeah, you're right. As soon as we go to that hurry-up offense, which we did in the last 3 minutes, you're like, why aren't we doing this for the other 57? Why do we do this strange stuff, these little weird experiments for Mike McCarthy for 57 minutes, and then all of a sudden it says, hell, we need to win the game. Okay.
I honestly think that some of that is this territorial markings from McCarthy. He wants to be in charge. He wants to call the shots. He has a lot of difficulty letting go and letting Aaron call the shots from the field. And I think, again, I said this before, this is why those last 3 minutes were so incredibly refreshing, because we really went off script. It was Aaron diagnosing the defense on the fly and really exploiting their weaknesses.
We're going to miss this guy when he's gone, Kelly. We really are.
Oh, we're going to be really sad. I'm going to be totally sad because...
And we really are.
The pack, we are. The thing is, I don't think... Because this dates back 22 years since... It'll be 23 years this January when Favre's Packers won the Super Bowl. We have caught lightning in the bottle twice, and we have had this level of elite command of the offense since 1992. You think about when Favre started, it was fall of 92. We haven't had a clinker other than backup quarterbacks since that time. We haven't had to worry about the downside of Eli Manning.
Well, especially when it seems like he's the one who raises the level of everyone else. You notice that with the defense, this was also very true, and I think it was concerning, disconcerting through most of the game on how awful that defense was. The defense was opening these huge holes. The receivers were just ripping apart. And this is with, what, a second or third string quarterback? This is with a second string running back? And, you know, Pierre Garçon, I mean, this guy played for, what, the Colts like 10 years ago?
What is he, like 108 years old now? Something like that?
Exactly. So they're ripping him apart, and I think that's the worst part. That was the most embarrassing part, is that, you know, this was a defense that we thought really had made some strides last week and really fell apart. But at the same time that Rodgers raises the level of play on the offense, is suddenly where the defense finishes with three straight three and outs. Where was that the rest of the game?
They,
but once again, like I said, you can see that when the players took ownership, they did great. So we'll definitely touch on Mr. McCarthy here after the break. But
well, everyone keeps talking about the last 3 minutes of the game. I think you really need to take in consideration the last 4 minutes of the game, because that really was where the defense came alive. They were dead on arrival until then. But you're right. They finally, that that interception and the fact that they were just finally stopping them. And it was such a stark contrast. You know, had Al been here, his Limburger cheese would have been Kentrell Bryce, because once again, he got beat deep for a touchdown. And as long as he's back, their opposing teams are going to exploit him. They know he's a weak spot. They know he's off in his coverage a step or two every single time. So I don't know what the gut check was with 4 minutes to go, but the defense rose to the occasion, and thank God they did.
And I guess when you talk about how bad this defense is, we need to go back and talk about one Mr. Clay Matthews.
Some point during the season, I'm going to make a tally of his salary and the ratio of how many tackles he actually gets. Because right now he's getting like a basquillion dollars per tackle, because that's how inefficient he is.
Well, and he's not really even involved in a lot of the play. And I hate to say it, my eyes tend to go to him time after time on plays, because you're like, okay, this is the guy who's supposed to be, you know, the leader of our defense. He's certainly the one who gets a lot of attention. He's still the guy who's marketed quite a bit. When you saw that pitch play, you saw that screen pass that they passed that threw out to Pierre Garçon, and he's just running in the open field, and Matthews just runs a straight line. It doesn't even look like he's aiming, and he just keeps running, and Garçon just stops and lets him pass and then just runs. It wasn't even a great move. There wasn't any real shiftiness. It wasn't a Barry Sanders move. He literally wasn't trying. He just ran. It's this ha-ha Clinton Dix theory of, I'm not going to tackle him. I'm just going to try to redirect him into someone else who will tackle him. And if this guy is your starting linebacker, your star linebacker, your guy making $8 million a year against the cap, there's a real issue. Just to extend it, he did get a sack.
It looked, it was an expectation. It's not like, oh, yay, he got a sack. It's like he should be doing that every single game, because that's what we're paying him the big bucks for. But it isn't that play with Garçon that drove me nuts. It was a separate one where I can't even think of the third-string quarterback's name, but he took off running, and he got a first down. I think he got like 15-some yards. And Clay Matthews was like a little police escort with his little flashy lights running alongside of him, not doing anything. That's the play that drove me batty. Because if he seemed to check out on the play with Pierre Garçon, he was like in another county with this escort he gave the quarterback.
And the other one that got me was actually the sack. Because if you watched him, he pushed into the backfield. He actually went a little bit past the quarterback. The quarterback was in panic mode. He turned around, and there was actually a pause. He turned and faced him, and just a foot, 2 feet away from him, just stared at him. And then he makes the stupidest move for a tackle you could ever do. He leaped on top of him like he was going to ride him like a pony. And took him down like that. That reminded me of when Brett Favre gave himself up to Michael Strahan to give him the sack record. It was like a gimme. It wasn't sack.
It was a comical sack. So that raises a really good question. Is his performance being dictated by his twitchiness towards the new sacking the quarterback rules? Or is he just that checked out? Because the first couple games, he seemed more aggressive. He was willing to rush the quarterback, take that risk, and possibly eat the flag. It's like he wouldn't even go near the quarterback. Or it was kind of like my dog. I'm going to use another silly analogy. My little evil terrier, you know, finding some dead squirrel outside and trotting it back. Like, oh, look what I did. Like, you didn't really sack the quarterback. You know, you found a dead squirrel. Bad analogy. I know. It was funnier in my head. I mentioned this last week. If he's not completely glaringly obvious with his ineptitude, there are other times he was not much different than Nick Perry. They just kind of blended into the woodwork, and you wondered if they were even on the field at all.
I feel like he just wants to make a big play, and that's why he's just kind of, it's like the old Chuck Cecil. He's just gearing up and wants to make these big hits. Well, then he makes the big hits on the quarterback, he gets penalized for him. But he doesn't want to do that dirty work of making tackles. That's someone else's job. I mean, he's supposed to be the glory guy getting all the sacks, and that's just the only thing he winds up for. And he's not doing it. He's just not effective. He isn't taking angles. He's not even trying to take an angle. That play just epitomized, that one with Garçon just epitomized where he's at. Personally, we should have packaged this guy up, given 2 first-round draft picks for Khalil Mack, plus Clay Matthews. And I think we would have got him. And right now, think how much better our defense would be right now, because look what it's done for the Bears. It was a bad, bad team. Man.
And now their defense is scary good.
You know, this reminds me with Clay Matthews, you know, when he had that kind of stupid halfway sack and he stood up and he started celebrating. I have to admit, it irritated me on the level of Finley's last season when he got like a three-yard reception and he was doing like the celebratory Finn gestures. Like, dude, this is nothing monumental. It's just your job. Why are you celebrating it? This should be the expectation all the time.
There's so much with Clay Matthews, and to me, once again, if he's your leader on defense, it really does explain why you have Kentrell Bryce, why you have HaHa Clinton Dix, why you're even seeing Josh Jackson, who had such a strong start, starting to regress a little bit, why you're seeing people like Kyler Fackrell, getting better, but you just have this feeling amongst the defense that no one's willing to go up and make that tackle. And then I watch even, say, the Detroit defense or the San Francisco defense, and these guys are taking angles, and they're trying to hit people. And I'm like, why isn't our defense doing that? So I don't know if this is something we can blame on Mike Pettine. I do think this is something, and we'll talk about it after the bump here, that I think comes from the culture right now you have, and that comes from the coaching.
Yeah, I think when we hit on that, I think that definitely is a factor. I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, like my own kid. My kid fails the test. It's on my kid. The whole class fails the test. It's on the teacher. Well, the whole class is failing on defense right now, and I think we need to talk about that in more depth in a little bit.
Well, let's take that break, and let's talk a little bit about this week's Tweets of the Week.
Packer Tweets. From Packer Tweets.
You're listening to Cheesehead Radio. It's time for our Tweets of the Week. This is where Kelly, myself, and Jersey Al each pick a great tweet, and we read it to you from the Packer game. I'll even read Jersey Al's, and see if we can include that in our votes. But Kelly, why don't you start out with your Tweet of the Week?
Okay, full disclosure, I almost nominated myself. And my tweet would have been, how much are we paying Clay Matthews to pick dandelions in the back of the field? But since I can't pick myself, I went with a very simple. Seriously, how many dollars are we paying him to pick dandelions? Because that's about effective as he is. He's like the five-year-old in the back of the soccer field doing cartwheels and picking dandelions. So I found a tweet that was in a very similar mindset. And it was really just kind of handing Clay Matthews the participation trophy for showing up. And it's from our friend out in the Twitterverse, Nurse Kelsey. Clay Matthews. Useless as always. Somehow he managed to not get a flag on that non-play call, though. So give Clay a juice box and some orange slices because he gets a participation trophy tonight.
About the best we can hope for from him. Mine comes from our good friend Mike Freeman at Mike Freeman NFL. And to me, this is just epitomizing Aaron Rodgers' performance. He says, ice water has Aaron Rodgers pumping through its veins. Boom.
That is a very Freeman tweet.
And we'll throw it in here because I think it's good. Jersey Al, although he can't join us tonight, did give us his tweet of the week. This comes from Senior Cheesehead at Sub-Zero PR. And his tweet was, Packers are a bad roughing the passer call and a Crosby field goal meltdown from being 5-1, but also a couple of Rodgers incompletions to be 1-5. What a team. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how we vote on this now when there's only two of us. I guess we have to say, Kelly, who are you going to vote for?
I'm going to vote for the Freeman tweet just because it was peak Freeman.
Okay. And see, I'd vote for Jersey Al's tweet, but he's not here, so I'm going to vote for you. So it's a tie.
Speaking of juice boxes and orange slices, participation trophies for everybody.
There we go. And Nurse Kelsey, Mike
ding,
Freeman,
ding,
you have this week's Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get down to it. I think Jersey Al was very excited to be here with us this week because he really wanted to punch me on how I've come around to Mike McCarthy not being a good coach. So I'm hoping it's killing him right now that he can't be here to do that. But we've really come full circle, I think, in these first six games on what Mike McCarthy is bringing to this team. And there's just so many analogies I see with end of tenure behavior by players and coaches and media. The fact that he's turning it over to Aaron Rodgers to win games for him, that's Ray Rhodes with Brett Favre. You're seeing the combativeness with the media. That's certainly old Bart Starr and Mike Sherman. You're seeing the cluelessness when things happen on the sidelines. He used to be all fiery and up there and involved, engaged. Now you see something happen, he just sits there with this dopey look on his face. So Forrest Gregg. So
yes. Oh my God. Yes. That
remember
is
that?
A perfect analogy. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So
and it was the, well, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And I don't care if it's 20 years in the past. That was the look we got from Forrest Gregg. And that is why his final season, I think we were what? 8-8, 7-9, really kind of stinky stank. But that was also a combination of Forrest Gregg and Tom Brotts and the complacency that the two brought together. And it was just awful. But that's another talk for another day on Old School Packers.
Well, that'll be our new segment. But
we're in
McCarthy,
we're
really
all older than dirt.
That's about it. Now, McCarthy is a highly successful football coach. And if you don't believe me, just ask him. And that's okay. And we can acknowledge that and we can respect that. But you see this all the time now when they talk about Mike McCarthy. It says, well, he does have a Super Bowl under his belt. Well, yes, it's 8 years ago. Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, my middle schooler was 3 years old when it happened.
Exactly. So at some point, every coaching tenure comes to an end, and it comes to an end when a coach no longer commands the respect of his team. Sometimes it's just because he has a country club attitude and they all feel like no one's accountable for anything. You certainly see some of that. You see that they're not responding to him or his leadership. You can see that he's getting very defensive and chip on his shoulder about everything and getting stubborn with some of the moves he's making. I don't know, Kelly. I think McCarthy is at the end of his rope.
Oh, I think the expiration date has already come and gone. I remember this quote from Aaron Rodgers when he used to do his radio show with Jason Wilde. And this was in regards to getting a nod to the Pro Bowl. That individuals get the accolade usually a year or two too late. In other words, they're not acknowledged at their peak. And on the flip side of it, they end their career one or two years too late. So I think when you're starting to hear him say, I'm a very successful football coach, I think he was already past his expiration date then. And I think back to the Bengals game a couple years ago. I don't know if that was 2012, 2013, about that time. And that's where you saw the first blow up between McCarthy and Rodgers on the field. And everyone was like, ooh, they're at odds. And since then, there's usually a blow up about a third of the way through the season. I think we saw it a little earlier this year where they seem like they're spatting on the sideline. And as I predicted last week, you get the walk back from both of them by the pressers on Wednesday that everything's hunky-dory. But everything isn't hunky-dory. It's Aaron, I think, is hamstrung a lot of times where he can't run an offense that I think that could be more effective than what McCarthy's calling. And again, I'm going to use the example of using a tight end as an H-back. It's just he did it again on Monday night. Rodgers got clobbered, and it's just the idea that McCarthy does things one way, and he's going to force the personnel to fit into that scheme, whether it works or not. And he hasn't evolved since 2011. You know, the Tampa 2 with a twist, that type of pass is still being run. We're still doing the draw play, 7 yards back. Everyone knows what he's going to do. He hasn't adjusted. You know, we had the season before Aaron got hurt where there was a lot of hurry-up offense, and suddenly it looked more innovative because Aaron was in charge. But we're back to McCarthy calling the shots. You know, he let Tom Clement be the offensive coordinator calling the shots. And when that didn't work, he took it back, and we're back to the same old, same old. And we're in a rut. It's like Groundhog Day. It's the, you know, it's 6 a.m., February 2nd, every single day, and nothing changes.
Well, nutshell, the best play caller on your team right now is Aaron Rodgers. And if you would just put Aaron Jones in the backfield with him and let him experiment, we'd be set. But we don't.
And the thing with Aaron, though, is he's willing to try things, and if it doesn't work, he's going to try something else. He isn't so set in a very scripted manner, you know, where Aaron's very spontaneous and will diagnose on the field. And you'll see that when he's really kind of making it up as he's going along, you'll see him adjust with 3 seconds to go. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But it's still a little less predictable than what McCarthy's got up his sleeve, because McCarthy's is a one-trick pony. And I mentioned this earlier in the show. You know, you can run the table, stink it up, and lose, and we'll get McCarthy out of here on a rail. But when you have a last-minute victory that feels pretty good, everyone's hugging Mason Crosby because he's the mayor of Redemptionville, unfortunately, that gives McCarthy a stay of execution. You know, had we gone 6-10 last year, I'm sure McCarthy would have been out with everybody else. But we were just this side of not stinky. We were just kind of marginally bad, that they were willing to give him one more year. So every win we have, and even if it's a squeaking out win against a really bad team, that's one more chance McCarthy gets to live to breathe another day. And I don't know if we owe it to him at this point, because watching Twitter during the game, even people that have been McCarthy's staunchest supporters, there were several confessions this week. It's like, okay, I'm with you guys now. He really needs to go. And it was people that have been standing up for him since they won the Super Bowl. And the tide's turning with the fans. I'm not sure what his relationship is with Aaron Rodgers, and I don't know what his relationship is with the rest of the team. But if you look at the dynamics of the team last year, Demarius Randle was in a territorial pissing match with him. You had people angry at him, and I think slowly by slowly he's losing player by player, and I think he's losing command of the team. And when you see sloppy play, like I said, it's on the coaches. Do the coaches have control of the team right now?
Well, and that was a lot for me to digest there, so hang on.
Yeah, I just kind of unloaded on you. Sorry. It's like, okay, I'm going to rant. Everyone stand back. I'm going to do my best Ray Hoare rant. Right. And I just barfed it all up. Sorry, guys. I get like that.
No, I think part of it is, yes, you can look at Aaron Rodgers, and that seems to be the overt observable things that in terms of what relationship they have, but I think it's the more covert things that you see, the things that are underlying. And that is, you have a coach who keeps talking with all of these excuses about, you know, we got to go back and, you know, clean this up. We got to fix pad level. We have to, you know, work on the basics. We have to refocus. We've been saying this now, and what you're seeing now is not a bunch of young players making mistakes. You're seeing veteran players not trying. Ha, Clinton Dix, as much as he has taken the shaft from us for the last several weeks, this guy is a Pro Bowl safety, and he's not playing like it. And we're asking ourselves why.
And if you look at his comment, he's kind of almost checked out too. And I know he was banning fans left and right for calling him on it. He's like, I don't know if I'm going to be here next year. Is that because he's worried he's going to get cut, or is he fed up with the current leadership as well? Have we lost Ha-Ha because of the coaches too? He's, you know, like you said, it's most prominent with Aaron. But is that Ha-Ha's way of saying things aren't good in defense land either?
Right. And if this is happening with Ha-Ha, then obviously it's affecting a Kentrell Price. And if it's happening with Clay Matthews, who isn't trying and is supposed to be, you know, the guy who should have the most accountability for leadership, and he's not. There's no accountability, so what are you going to see from the rest of the crew? I hate to say it, Mike Daniels has been kind of invisible this year. I mean, where has he been?
And then we bring back people like Tremont, and I'm sure he's a good locker room presence, but again, it's not translating to the field.
I think that Mr. McCarthy has reached a point where if this team had gone 2-3-1 instead of 3-2-1, there'd be an awful lot of people screaming this week. But you're right, it's a stay of execution, but I don't think he's out of the woods. We got a really, really rough part of the schedule coming up after this bye. So
this may be a little bit of that country club mindset, but it seems like every time we get to the playoffs, and this is definitely not a guarantee this year, a 1-and-out is enough to keep them there. And I'm thinking to the point where I'm picky enough now that 1-and-out is not enough, which sounds just elitist as can be, but how many times have we been there with 1-and-out, and it's like, there was some Cowboys fan that was popping off on Twitter talking about our playoff history. You know, it's like, okay, shut up. You haven't been to the playoffs since the Clinton administration, or the Super Bowl since the Clinton administration. But it's true with McCarthy. It's like, we have a lot of playoff appearances, but not a whole lot of playoff productivity.
Exactly. And I think it's something that's going to come back to haunt us the more that we're sitting and investing in this guy because of the one Super Bowl win that we had. A lot of people are screaming it out. We're wasting Aaron Rodgers' twilight years. Did it last week. And I did it tongue-in-cheek. I said, you know, for our game prediction, I said, well, the Packers are going to lose to the 49ers. We're going to fire Mike McCarthy over the buyer. Winston Moss is going to be the head coach. We're going to go. And I was kidding about that last week. During this game, I was legit.
You were totally
saying,
serious.
Okay. I was dead serious. Let's do this because, and then once again, we turn it around. Aaron Rodgers bails him out, and I think that is what has happened for many, many years. I think it's what Brett Favre did for Ray Rhodes. It's what he did for Mike Sherman. And to a degree, I think it's what he did for Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy his first couple of years, because he took an awful lot of, shouldered a lot of blame those first couple of years when Ted Thompson did not give him much to work with in 2006 and 2005. So. Hot Pockets, this is our last 30 seconds, our final dagger. Kelly, start us out.
All right, I'm gonna title this Fire Capers. Yeah, I kind of lost some of its mystique since we actually, well, fired Capers. But something is not right with the defense, and firing Capers didn't fix it. Yeah, who do we blame? There's really poor defensive technique. So there's so many missed tackles, so many wide open receivers that gashed the secondary. You know, where do we start with the problems? Yes, we can point at individuals, and I'm looking at you, Clay Matthews. Ha ha. Bryce, Fackrell. I can just keep going with the names. But where does the buck stop? When it's a global problem, when does it become a coaching issue because the fundamentals were all thrown out the window? There is so much sloppy play around that that there appears to be no accountability. My little kids' soccer team, they all start screwing up. You see the whole team working on a drill. What are they doing to correct these just glaringly football 101 mistakes? I'm going to sound like McCarthy. Yeah, we have to get back to basics. Even if it means going back to Pop Warner techniques, where they learn how to tackle again. It's just making me stabby with the sloppy play. And when it starts to be a global problem, I'm going to start pointing the fingers at the defensive coaching staff because, like I said before, one kid fails a test, it's on the kid. The whole class fails a test, it's on the teacher. And I think we have a whole class failing the test right now. So that, my long-winded rant, which was more than 30 seconds, is my
Hot Pocket.
Nice. Well, my hot pocket this week is also going to be on the defense, but I think it's going to be a little more reflective on where we've been. In this past year, we have fired Dom Capers and we have fired Ted Thompson. And part of the reason was Dom Capers' defense was ineffective, but there's an awful lot of blame cast upon Ted Thompson for his terrible, terrible drafts over the past several years. And I'm not going to take anything away from that. I think, obviously, Ted did decline, and there was some excitement that I had in seeing how Brian Gutekunst really approached his draft this year. It was very exciting, and more how I would approach a draft or how I'd be excited about a draft. That stated, our good friend Andy Herman over at Cheesehead TV at Scani Sports posted this last week, so this is prior to this week's set of games, but I think it was very interesting, where he looked at Pro Football Focus's rankings and how different players who've left the Packers would be performing or where they would rank right now on the team. And we have people like Jordy Nelson, who did have that one awesome week. Obviously, he's up there. Jared Cook would have been our number one tight end. But I think when you look at our defensive players, right now would be, if he were still with the Packers and had the stats he had, he'd be our number one edge rusher. Think about that. We've let Julius Peppers go. If you brought him back the way he's doing right now at whatever age he is now, 48, he would be our number one guy. Speaking of guy, Lawrence Guy would be our number one defensive tackle. What does that say about Mike Daniels and company? But most of all, our secondary, our much maligned secondary, people that we let go because we couldn't afford them or we thought they weren't going to be good enough or we thought we had attitude problems. Sam Shields, right now good enough to be our number two corner. Casey Hayward right now enough to be our number four corner, but I think this is the one that really hurts. Demarius Randall is playing well enough to be our number two safety, and Micah Hyde our number three. if you think about those players, especially in the secondary, who've gone on to have success, we have Demarius Randle, who really was a distraction last year, and yet now he's having great success with Cleveland. You have guys like Shields and Hayward and Hyde, who we just let go because we thought we couldn't afford them. Maybe the problem was never with the talent. And maybe this is a little post-defense of Ted Thompson. But hey, maybe he didn't do all that bad with his drafts. Maybe we just had a real problem developing them. And as we're talking about the situation with Mike McCarthy and the culture that he has this team in, maybe that's where we should be looking right now in terms of how we're going to fix the problem with the people we have right now. And that is my
Hot Pocket.
Cheesehead Radio. Packers game predictions.
That sting is always a little bit loud. I should probably turn that one down. Anyway, Packer game predictions. We do not have a game next week. The Packers, thankfully, are on a bye. So what we're going to predict is what we most would like to see over the bye week. As for me, I think when we saw Mr. Jones make that interception at the end of the game, I think maybe he's the guy that we need to replace at safety. It's kind of what I thought was going to happen to begin with. I thought it was going to be Jones and Clinton Dix at safety this year, so I was a little surprised when Bryce was in there, but Bryce has proven to be so ineffective. If there is something I want to see happen over this break, besides Aaron Rodgers healing up, it's going to be let's fix that safety thing. Getting Jair Alexander is going to be a great, because I think he's been really solid this year, too. That's really going to help. Kelly, what do you think?
Okay, are we wishing for ponies, or are we going for real predictions?
You may do whatever you want.
Okay, I want a pony. I want a different head coach. But since that's not going to happen, I have just as good of a chance of getting a pony. Well, let's go for something realistic. I would love to see McCarthy let go of a little bit of control and let Aaron start running the offense a little bit more on his own and more independently. I want to see more of the no-huddle offense. I want to see more play calling right behind the line of scrimmage. I want to see that spontaneity, because that's when the Packers are hot. When the Packers are scripted, they fall apart. So, yeah, I guess it's a pony as well, because I don't know if McCarthy will let go of it, but that's what I would like to predict see happening, because that's about the only prediction I think that could improve the offense right now, other than Aaron getting healthy and all the receivers returning.
All right. And I'll just read out Jersey Zal's prediction. His prediction, which I think is all of ours, we want to see Aaron Rodgers' knee healed up, because no matter what we scream and clamor for, this group is a run-of-the-mill NFL team without Aaron Rodgers. And as we saw at the end of the game, a healthy Aaron Rodgers is the one thing that can elevate this team to a very, very good team. All right.
I think that's a show.
We did it. It was a duo. It was only two people this week, and I think we managed to get through it.
Oh, yeah. The two blabbermouths can yammer on for an hour. Here's my shocked face, CB. Totally shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Well, let's close it out.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio in our ninth season. Make sure to head over to PackersTalk.com, where you can explore several unique Packers podcasts. Please follow at PackersTalkNet on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers Talk podcasts are available on iTunes. Just Google Packers Talk iTunes and you'll find it. Be sure to subscribe and please leave us a review if you can. You can also listen to us by using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatching app and search for Packers Talk. Finally, please be sure to support our sponsor, Ticket King. You can find them on the web at theticketking.com. That's theticketking.com. That's a wrap, CD. Go Pack Go!
Go Pack Go! We'll be back next week to prep you for that big game against the Rams. Until then, Go Pack Go! Go Brewers!